No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Marilia Duffels, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Marilia, unfortunately, had an emergency tonight, so she won't be on the show, but we're excited to have a member of Congress, my member of Congress, Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton. And I would give you her biography, but that would take the entire show. Let me just tell you a few of the high points. She's a Yale Law School graduate, constitutional law professor. In her 15th term as a member of Congress, she's been named one of the 100 most important American women and one of the most powerful women in Washington. Her work for full democracy for the people of District Columbia continues her lifelong struggle for universal human and civil rights. Congresswoman, welcome back to the show. We're so glad to have you.
Glad to be with you.
And you know what? You and I don't know that you started out this way, but I started out this way working for Jimmy Carter, a man that I'm proud to say I worked for, you know, especially in light of some of the recent people that have had that office. But anyway, let me ask you first what I think is an important question for us here in the District of Columbia. As you well know, Frederick Douglass wrote an important speech called What to the American Slave is Your 4th of July? I wouldn't compare our indentured servitude or our disenfranchisement to slavery, but don't we have a, shouldn't we be asking a similar question since we're the only people in a democracy that do not have the same rights as the rest of the people in that government? Shouldn't Washingtonians be saying the same thing?
Well, it's a fair question. When you pay the highest federal taxes per capita and don't have full representation in the House and no representation in the Senate, Frederick Douglass would look at Washington and see in us a reflection of what he spoke of.
And do you think that there's a movement now in, you know, on the eve of the 4th of July, are we moving backwards? Are we moving backwards with the recent decision in the Supreme Court? Which, you know, I got to tell you, every woman in my family is just irate about the fact that these people are overturning Roe versus Wade. And is that an effort on the part of conservatives in America to push us back 50 years, do you think?
Well, the Supreme Court is certainly pushing us back in a series of decisions, and Roe versus Wade is an important indication of that. There are states, we're going to have a harder time, but there are states who are going to be able to maintain their rights. Because about half the states, it seems to me, have a good chance. Of course, the district is always under the thumb of the Congress and will have a harder time.
Well, we see this. I mean, now that you brought up the states, I've got to tell you, this is probably the most absurd thing that I've heard in a long time. But there, and I don't know if you've heard this because it's just been reported, but the Texas Tribune reports that a group of educators has recommended to the school board, which adjusts the curriculum for schools in Texas every 10 years, they've suggested that with their new approach of not saying things that make people feel uncomfortable, that they should teach elementary school children, they should change slavery to involuntary relocation.
Now,
if this was a Saturday night.
Relocation where? From Africa?
I guess, you know, it makes it sound like maybe they built houses too close to a nuclear power plant or something and we asked them to move. I mean, if this were a Saturday Night Live sketch, you would laugh at it. But unfortunately, this is serious. And I think, and I don't know, you know better than I, but I think this is that the Supreme Court decision for this, and as you point out, other things like carry laws and other things that are changing, I think this has emboldened them to think that they can do this kind of ridiculous stuff. And I don't know what liberals have to do. Do you think this is a reaction to the fact that we're trying to push in the other direction, that we're tearing down monuments of people that, you know, have been glorified in our history, but have actually worked against African-Americans, for example? Do you think that this is their reaction to that, that they're pushing back, or that they just feel emboldened by people like Justice Thomas, and they figure this is the way they can move their agenda forward?
They're emboldened by the majority they have achieved on the court. Mm. That's what's emboldening them to take these decisions that carry us back to the 19th century.
It's incredible to me. And, you know, we saw a reaction in America to racism when we saw things like the incident with George Floyd. But now we're seeing it raise its ugly head. Do you think that it's always been there and it's just coming to the surface again? Or is there a
new... That what has always been there, I'm sorry. That what has always been there.
That racism that we just pushed it down. You know, like they used to say, you know, that we talked the talk, but we didn't walk the walk. You know, do you think we've just pushed it underground and now it's coming back? We certainly see, for example, in Buffalo, that those people that were killed, that was an incident of racism. We don't know about Uvalde, Texas, I guess, because they were all brown-skinned children, whether that was an act of racism. But we certainly have seen Charlottesville, Charleston, all these incidents in the past few years. Does there need to be a new civil rights movement that involves us all, like the civil rights movement that you were involved in the South? Is that what we need in America? Do we all need to stand up again? And how do we do that?
Well, racism was born with the country itself, so it's never gone away. We mute it, but as we saw in Buffalo, where it reared its head, you will not replace us, and was clear, perhaps more clear about racism than any incident that I can recall.
Yeah, it certainly seems to me it's hard for me to talk about, to be honest, because I am a clear beneficiary of racism in America. I am an orphan. I dropped out of high school, worked my way through college and graduate school, and I had all sorts of opportunities because my parents were smart enough before they both passed away when I was a teenager to bring me to Montgomery County, Maryland, which was a nice white suburban community. You know it well. And there were a lot of people that helped me. And I used to go back to my hometown of Newark, New Jersey, and see how African Americans were treated. And I realized right away that I had been moved to a place which promoted me and helped me, and I might have not otherwise made it. You know, when I lived in Newark, Congresswoman, they had the highest African American population in America, but I never saw a black policeman, never had a black teacher, never saw a black person in a government job. And when I came to Maryland, I realized that I had not only been a beneficiary of being white, but also being male. And so it's hard for me to talk about this, but it's something that's
troubling
me. Yeah,
but you also lost both your parents, and that is a huge debt that I think African Americans, in their own way, would understand. Because that is huge.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. I got to tell you, and I don't know that my listeners will understand this really, but you'll understand it. When I come to Ward 3, people ask me what I've done for them lately. When I go to Ward 8, the first thing people say to me is, thanks for coming. It's absolutely true. You know, they're appreciative that you've just shown up for them. Here we have such, for our listeners, Ward 3 is one of the wealthiest wards in the city, and Ward 8 is probably the poorest. And in Ward 3, we have a sense of entitlement that they don't seem to have in Ward 8, that they feel like they want your help, but they appreciate you coming. So, I think you're right about that. The biggest issue for me, the only issue for me, and a major issue for you, is statehood for the District of Columbia. You've gotten past a bill in the House of Representatives for the second time, a bill for D.C. statehood. It passed with 216 Democrats and now sits in the Senate with 47 co-sponsors, which is the highest amount of co-sponsors we've ever had. We wish we could talk the Democrat from West Virginia, who, you know, I'm really not sure why he's a Democrat, because he acts like a Republican, but we can't get...
Because he's from a Republican state.
He is from a Republican state, but we all remember Senator Byrd, don't we, Congresswoman? And as a Democrat, he was a little different and a little more supportive than Senator Manchin. And we also have Senator Kelly, which surprises me because his wife supported the D.C. Voting Rights Act. Did she not, when she was in Congress? And we also have Senator Sinema, who seems to be, you know, aligned with Senator Manchin, will never get this bill through the United States Senate unless we can suspend the filibuster. And it seems to me...
And you see that the president is trying to suspend the filibuster now.
Right.
On at least one issue.
Yes.
And If we suspend it on one, maybe it will be on its last legs.
Well, let's hope for that. And if you could suspend it, what more basic thing, you know, if you can't suspend it for the basic right of people to vote, to have a vote in both houses of their legislature, what can you suspend it for? I mean, it seems to me that that's the most basic thing, you know, that's the most basic issue that you have in a democracy, right? Thomas Jefferson said citizen was the most important distinction in a democracy. And if we don't have full citizenship, we'll never be full participants in our democracy. So if you can't suspend it for that, I can't imagine what other thing you can suspend it for. And I hope you're right that maybe this is the beginning of the end for that. Because
we have done very well on statehood this Congress. I'm worried that we'll lose the House.
Yes.
But we did pass the statehood bill, as you indicated, twice. Got a hearing in the Senate. And I'm all set to get another hearing in the Senate. So I think, as with everything in the Congress, you have to just keep pushing until you finally push it out.
Well, the first thing that you ever said to me in the first meeting that we ever had with a group in your office has stuck with me, and I try to think of it every day, that nothing is generated. You said nothing is generated within the walls of Congress. It comes from pressure from the outside. You know, that's what makes it happen, right? It's not, I mean, not to take, look, I love that you are kind enough to share credit for what happened in the House with advocates who have been advocating for this for years. But those of us that are involved know that more than anything, it was your effort over the years that allowed that, made that thing happen, made the passage of H.R. 51 a reality. So, what do we do about pressure from the outside? It seems to me that we're not putting any pressure from the outside. You know, we had the only Republican in the history of America to ever vote for D.C. statehood, a guy that I know you know, Wayne Gilchrist from Maryland, who, by the way, is still out there fighting the good fight. He's trying to clean up the Chesapeake Bay. He must be well into his 80s. But we had him on the show. He's the only Republican in 40 years of this battle that's ever supported D.C. statehood. I meet with these people as much as I can. The last senator I met with face-to-face was Susan Collins of Maine. And she told me retrocession, you know, which is a red herring. Is it not?
It sure is. But remember this. Remember how statehood occurred for every state. It occurred because there was one Democratic territory and one Republican territory. Every single state came into the Union because of that opposition. We don't have another state. And yet, and this is what's really important, in a very detailed poll was shown that showed that 54% of the American people support statehood for the District of Columbia. And that's without another state to team up with.
Well, what about Puerto Rico? Do we need to team up with Puerto Rico? As you probably know, they've elected a delegation like the delegation that we have here in Washington, and that's been used several times under what we generally refer to as the Tennessee Plan. Do we have to partner with Puerto Rico, who certainly have more Republicans? Let me tell you, one of the things that astounds me is that you supported their bill, but we can't get the Puerto Rican member of Congress who we've talked to several times to support our bill. Did she support the D.C. voting? I mean, the H.R.
Well, I don't know because she can't vote on it.
Oh, right. You're right. She can't vote on it. But she's never been vocal about it either.
No, she hasn't been. But as for statehood for Puerto Rico, that's very iffy because they're divided on whether they want statehood. It barely passes.
Yeah.
In their referenda, in the referenda they've had on statehood.
And I think our trepidation, our delegation has met with their delegation, but our trepidation is also understanding that they would get six members of the House of Representatives based on their population, and they would also come in as the poorest state by far in the union because their income is half of what Mississippi's is, which is hard to believe. Their average income for people in Puerto Rico. So that, we've always seen that as an encumbrance that they would, they would come in as the poorest state and they would get so many representatives because their population is so large. We, on the other hand, are one of the richest jurisdictions. We often say, as you said early on, that we pay the highest taxes in America. That's because we're the wealthiest people in America. We're also the most educated people in America. More people in Washington, D.C. have graduate degrees than any other jurisdiction in America. But, it seems to me... It seems to me that we don't put a lot of effort into garnering support from other Americans. We kind of leave it up to you. We put the burden on your shoulders to make it work.
Well, but it's very hard for residents to somehow get people outside of the city. We have DC Vote, who spreads the word, but it's very difficult to get people who are not in the District of Columbia to make the statehood for the District of Columbia a primary issue.
But isn't that how that you did it in the Civil Rights Movement? Wasn't it fire hoses? Pictures of fire hoses and dogs attacking young black students that got America to stand up and say enough is enough. Don't we need to, we're going to have a 4th of July celebration tomorrow, Congresswoman. The entire, country will be focused on the District of Columbia for this great holiday, which, by the way, Washingtonians fully support. I mean, we serve, and then we not only pay the highest taxes, we serve in the military at the highest, higher than the national average. We had more casualties per capita in the Vietnam War than almost any state. We're loyal American citizens, but yet there's not going to be a word about statehood tomorrow. There's not going to be a commercial. There'll be commercials during the presentation. There won't be a commercial. There won't be a sign. There won't be a protest because the city leaves it up to you. They don't put money into this. They don't even support our delegation. We're the only delegation in recent history that hasn't been paid. The Alaskan shadow senators got paid. They call us shadow senators, even though that's not our title, to diminish our effectiveness. They send the mayor at the last Senate hearing, Congresswoman, we had more than 150 people call the committee and demand that we're allowed to speak, and they don't let us speak. They send our two most compromised lobbyists, the mayor and the chairman of the city council, who have to ask Congress for hundreds of millions of dollars up there to explain what every member of Congress knows. Every member of Congress, and you know this, knows that this is wrong and knows that it's not unconstitutional. Constitution just says you're the constitutional expert, but my understanding is it says exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever, which means that they can take our rights away, but they can also restore them. Is that not true?
Of course.
And we don't do anything on the outside, it seems to me, to push for this. We call it, the mayor and the chairman call it a priority. And look, I'm not trying to put them down for their effort. I'm just saying that we need to adjust things. But they call it a priority, and yet they spend $100 million on affordable housing and over $1 billion on education. Now, we all care about education and affordable housing, but shouldn't we spend more than the $250,000 we spend a year on statehood? Don't we need to do that to garner support?
Well, it would certainly help.
Yeah, I think you're
everything,
right.
Money talks in Congress.
Yeah, I think you're right. And by the way, while we're on the subject, let me thank you on behalf of Mrs. Brown and I, because one of the main things that you've done over the years is you brought forth a program called TAG, Tuition Assistance Grants. And two of my three children took advantage of that.
Where did they go to college?
Well, one of them went to Towson University here outside of Baltimore, and another one went to Evergreen State University in Oregon.
I'm glad to hear that they were able to take advantage of it.
Oh, my God. And my daughter went to DePaul, which was a private school. And I got to tell you, me and Mrs. Brown, because she was accepted to some public schools, we ruminated about it, but she got a scholarship. So we figured, well, she's getting a partial scholarship. That's almost the same as getting a tag money. But, you know, I retired 12 years ago and do this full time. And in that 12 years, all three of my kids went through college. So without that $40,000 that...
They went to college after you retired?
Yeah. And the only way
they
made it through was because of that tag. If they didn't have that tag money, they would be seriously in debt right now. Even though Mrs. Brown and I... This is remarkable to me. Mrs. Brown and I paid somewhere in the neighborhood of $200,000 after taxes to put the three of them to school, but each one of them took out $5,000 a year in student loans. So that money that they got from the government, thanks to your efforts, really made the difference. Between now, all we have to do is find them jobs. Now that they've graduated from college. They're all working, fortunately, but two of them are not working at what they want to do, I think. But that's okay. They'll get there. And thanks again for your support. And there's so many people that you've helped. I mean, that this program has helped, not just people like us, because we probably would have found a way. They would have taken out more loans, or but there are a lot of people in Washington, D.C., that wouldn't have otherwise gone to college. And one thing I didn't mention when I talked about my past is that I was a high school dropout. When I was 16 years old, I acted out and I dropped out of high school. And I now have a master's degree. I went back to school and got a master's degree at the University of Maryland in public policy. And I think how different my life would have been if I had remained someone without a college education, without a high school education. And, it really changed my life in every way that it could be changed. And so that program, I hope you take pride in the fact that there are many young people in Washington that have a better life because of what you've done. But, again, I don't know what we can do to support, our efforts from the outside, but I think we need to think of of ways. And I've tried, you know, I put up billboards when we went to Charlotte for the convention. I now have a sign that's, it's about 6 feet by 4 feet in my front yard, because I am the first house that you pass when you come into the District of Columbia, Congresswoman. When you come down Massachusetts Avenue, my house is the very first house, you know, and I live on Western Avenue, which separates the district from Maryland. And I often say, if I ever wrote an autobiography, it would be entitled Disenfranchised by Inches, because, you know, if I could move my house across the street, you know, I wouldn't. So I put this sign up, and in big red letters, it says, "Warning, you're entering the District of Columbia, the nation's capital. Residency here may result in the loss of your basic civil rights. The loss of your rights do not remove your obligations to the state for which you may be liable." And you know what? When we put it up, I said to my wife, "Oh my God, the neighbors are going to complain about this." But it's been up for a year, and not one neighbor has complained about it. They've all, you know, many people have applauded it. Many people stand in front of it and take pictures. So we have.
What do you have up in front of your house?
This sign. It's like a welcome sign to the District of Columbia, but it warns you, if you live here, you're going to lose your basic civil rights. And it sits on my front yard. I mean, you can't miss it. I live on Westmoreland Circle. You can't miss it when you come in. And not one neighbor has said anything negative about it. I've gotten a lot of people that say, "Great, that's a great idea," you know. And it just occurred to me, because they give us so little resources, that I've always tried to figure out, what can I do to get the word out, because that's such an important thing. And when I realized our house was the first house you came in when you came into the District of Columbia, and you know what? I'm going to propose, and I don't know whether they'll do this or not, but I'm going to propose to the city council, and hopefully a city council member will take this on, that this be a codicil on every real estate contract, that you need to initial it and say, "Yes, I understand that if I move from any state in the United States to the District of Columbia, I'm not going to be represented the way I should be represented in Congress." Now, I don't know if we can get them to do that. I think the real estate people might have a problem with that. But I think we need to move forward. And I think we need to, you know, it really bothered me. And I wrote an article for the Washington Post. I think they published it online, where when we talked about the Voting Rights Acts that were recently before the United States Senate, and we didn't mention the District of Columbia. It bothered me that there were people all over the country talking about how important it was to pass these two voting rights pieces of legislation, neither one of which passed in the Senate, both of which passed in the House, and never, you know, because we didn't want to disenfranchise African Americans in Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi. But nobody said anything about the 350,000 African Americans that live in the District of Columbia that have been disenfranchised. So I don't know what we have to do as a government, not you, because you've done an amazing job getting this legislation passed. But how do we get people? You know, it just bothers me that we don't put any money into it to get people to support your efforts. So I don't know what next steps are, but what do you think next steps are for us?
Well, having gotten the statehood bill done in the House, that's a historic step, never done before. And what we've got to do now is to build on that.
Do we go, you know, it seems to me it wouldn't cost a lot to get a few buses together and go over to West Virginia. And, you know, I don't want to stand outside of Senator Manchin's house, but who probably lives in Bethesda anyway. But But I think we, you know, maybe we should put up a few billboards in West Virginia. Maybe we should remind them, because, you know, I remember during the D.C. Voting Rights Act that we brought in someone to testify at one of your hearings who was a veteran who had dual citizenship between Iraq and the United States. And he had fought with the Marine Corps, I think, if I'm recalling it correctly, in either Afghanistan or Iraq. And he said, I have representation in Iraq, but I don't have representation in the United States. So maybe we need to put up a few billboards in West Virginia with D.C. veterans saying, shouldn't I have the same rights you have? I don't know, but I think we really need to get out there. And we've tried, you know, that our representative, Oye Oluwalawa, has been to West Virginia. And my colleague, Paul Strauss, has started Iowans for D.C. Statehood. You would not believe how active they are, Congresswoman. It's
that's
just
amazing.
Yeah. And we've got Nevadans for D.C. statehood and Californians for D.C. statehood. But most of them are college
students. All of that's very helpful.
Well, we hope. And,
the Iowans
have just taken it on with a passion. You know that they got every Democrat who ran for president. And if you remember, there were a lot of them in the primaries. They got every one of them to sign an agreement that they support D.C. statehood.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, during the Iowa caucuses. And we're lucky enough that the chairman of that whole thing is the former head of the Democratic Party in Des Moines. She was the chairman of the Des Moines Democratic Party, and that's ground zero during the Iowa caucuses. So she's been a great help. Well, you know, as we celebrate our democracy tomorrow, which we'll all do, I don't know if you're in any parades. I'm in a parade. I had foot surgery, so someone's been kind enough to donate a convertible that I can ride in. So, I know you've been in the Palisades Parade before, and we throw candy to children, and it's a great celebration because it's really a throwback. Everybody gets together. And by the way, let me invite anybody that's out there to come. It starts at noon, and we all end up in Palisades Park, and we have hot dogs and watermelon and bad music. There's always a bad band, and we commune with each other. So it's a great celebration. Of course, on the Mall, we'll have an amazing celebration as well. And I think that it would be great if, as American citizens, we could be fully immersed in it and be equal participants. Again, to quote the great Frederick Douglass, this day more than any other reveals the gross injustice of our captivity. And he was referring to slaves, of course, and not the people of Washington, D.C., but I think there is certainly a similar sentiment here in the district. Now let me also say happy birthday to you. I know your birthday was last month.
Thank you.
And congratulations. You squeaked by in the primary with, I think, 94% of the voter or something like that. You're the most popular politician in the history of the District of Columbia. You got more votes than Obama got. You got a higher percentage of vote in the District of Columbia than Obama got when the two of you ran at the same time. So, you know, you're amazing. And I want to tell you this too, the Capitol Hill newspaper Roll Call asked me in an interview one time, they said, if you really want to work on D.C. statehood, instead of running for the office you have, why don't you run against Eleanor Holmes Norton? And my response to that was, if I ran against Eleanor Holmes Norton, I would vote for Eleanor Holmes Norton. Because you really are, I don't know how we got you, Congresswoman, but you've just done an incredible job. And I always had great respect for you, but no more than I've had since I've had this job and been able to sit on the sidelines and look at you up close and see what a challenge it must be to represent us without a floor vote. I know that you have there's many things you can do in Congress and committee. You can put forth legislation, you can vote in committee, you can do all everything a member of Congress can do except a floor vote, which is so important. But I remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to become chair of a full committee this term too. I can do that.
Well, we ought to be able to figure out a way to support you in that effort too. I hope we are. I remember standing up and being arrested in a committee meeting that you had, being removed with a gag over my mouth with several other people, because there was some issue that only affected the District of Columbia, and the committee refused to allow you to speak to that issue. We were flabbergasted by that. And I remember that some people from DC Vote, I think, and from other organizations, we all stood up. And actually, just to finish that story, they removed like eight of us from the hearing, and they were going to arrest us, but they didn't have any way to transport us, so they let us go. You know, and they said it's funny because I heard on the radio. I just happened to be at the end of the line, and I heard the police officer talking on the radio saying, "Well, what do you mean you don't have a transport vehicle? There's no way to transport these people." Blah blah blah. And then they came over and they said, "Well, since you didn't do anything really mean or nasty, we're just going to let you go." It's just amazing. It also amazed me with how effective you are that there was so much resistance to the D.C. Voting Rights Act that would have given you a vote and would have given an additional vote to the state of Utah, would have given them an additional member of Congress. And, you know, it was amazing to me that they put up so much resistance to that, because you were so effective without a vote anyway. It seems like it wouldn't have been a big reach on their part. And as you say, you know, there would have been a Republican involved too. So I just hope we push for you to be a committee chairperson, because I think that would be a great move for us. Well, we're running out of time here, and we don't want to take up too much of your time, Congresswoman, but is there anything that you'd like to say that we haven't talked about?
Well, I think you've covered the waterfront, and I so appreciate the way you're educating our citizens on all the issues.
Well, that's really, it's been my honor to do this. You know, I was lucky enough, again, as I told you, to get a good education, and I started my own consulting firm. I've worked on more than a half a dozen presidential campaigns and was able to make enough money that at 53 years old, I retired and decided to just do this full time.
That's amazing.
So we do it, and there's so many people out there that we could give credit to. You know their names as well as I do. And so again, Congressman Eleanor Holmes Norton, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I wish you a happy 4th. Are you in any parades tomorrow?
I'm not going to go in any parades tomorrow. I usually go in the one on I forget its name.
The Capitol Hill one, the one up Barracks Row, or the Palisade
one? No, not that one. there's another one in Ward 8, but I'm not going on any of those parades in this heat.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I have my great nephew in town for a few days, and we took him around, him and a buddy. They were college students, and we showed them our beautiful city. And I took him to a baseball game yesterday. One of them is a college, plays baseball for his college team. He's a pitcher, and they couldn't even make it through the whole game. It was so hot. And they were 20 years old, and they were standing up. We got great seats down front, you know, and they were standing up under the shade because it was so hot. They couldn't. Yeah, so I don't blame you, but I know you'll be there in spirit. And I wish you the happiest of July 4th, and I hope that together we can put some pressure on our friends in the D.C. government to put some more money into this, and we can move this forward. And I thank you for everything you've done for the citizens of the District of Columbia.
It's been so good to be with you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for all you are doing for statehood.
Thanks. We'll talk again soon, I hope. All right. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I hope I get to call you that soon.
I hope so, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Congressman Eleanor Holmes Norton, and we're let her go a little early tonight because we know that she's very busy. I want to, if her staff is listening, I want to thank them for their help in arranging all this because, you know, as a member of Congress, she's got a busy schedule. But I want to talk for a few minutes because I have a profound belief in the goodness that is America. You know, I said earlier that I was a high school dropout. I was an orphan. I got to work my way through college and graduate school, which, by the way, if there are any college students out there, I want you to know that it cost me about $2,000 a year to do that. $2,000. It really bothers me that young people that try to do that today have to put themselves into years and years of debt. When I got out of college, when I got out of graduate school, I had a debt of less than $3,000, which they allowed me to pay, I think, over 5 years at an interest rate of 2%. So I don't know how we can get back to those days, but I hope we can. But the point of telling you all this is that I believe in my heart that there's no place in the world where I could have gone from being a high school dropout to having an elected office, citywide elected office, as your United States Senator. And I'm so grateful for that. And I so much love my country. I put my hand over my heart when they bring out the flag. I stand up for everybody that's ever put on a uniform and protected me and my family and our rights. That includes my brother, Paul, who was a decorated combat veteran, all the way back to my great, 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 great grandfather, Joel Prescott, who served in the Revolutionary Army during the during the Revolutionary War, where he enlisted at the age of 17. So for everybody out there that's ever worn the uniform, I want to say thank you for your service. Tomorrow is your day more than anybody else's. And as we celebrate all the things that are great about America, we also celebrate you. I'd like to say, however, and I just touched on this with the Congresswoman. I didn't get into it because it really deals more with the city government than it deals with her. But the truth of the matter is that I've been elected to represent you, and the people in this city don't allow that to happen. And by the way, when I say the people, I mean the people in city government. I and my colleagues, the members of our delegation, our other United States Senator Paul Strauss and our representative Oye Oluwalawa, are the only city-wide elected officials in the District of Columbia who are not paid. We are also the only citywide elected officials that are not allowed to raise matching funds for our campaigns, even though the last man that ran against me spent over $200,000 campaigning. This is a real office. Our requirements to take this office are more stringent than the requirements to become mayor. Yet the people in the city council and the people with money in the District of Columbia, primarily the city council, refuses to support us, refuses to fund us, and in the end, unfortunately, refuses to fund our efforts sufficiently. We get about $225,000 a year to run three offices and to make you a state. And that's just not enough. Millions and millions and millions of dollars were put into the civil rights movement in the South. Ralph Nader, who was a guest on our show, estimates that we have to put $10 million a year into this effort. The same estimate was made by the people at DC Appleseed, which is a public interest group that keeps an eye on issues of equity and democracy in our city. They've also estimated $10 million a year. So we need to work with a budget of $19 billion to allow this effort to go forth with more than a handful of volunteers. Because as Congressman Norton said, nothing is ever generated inside the walls of Congress. It all comes from pressure on the outside. So with that, I leave you, and I hope that you will join with me in trying to make our democracy work. We're going to have an event on August 11th at the Arena Stage where there'll be a play about Frederick Douglass. It's the anniversary of when he made his first great speech. For those of you out there that want to join us, I hope you'll come to our website, statehoodnow.org, where you can get information on how you can attend. And with that, I leave you. As you know, we always leave with a song. So this goes out to Congressman Norton. Here's Mariah Carey with Hero. Happy 4th of July.
Give the people their right to vote.